to do. So let's start here with me and you. Gonna take a little time. Let's see.
And welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We are giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. It is the 3rd of August. Unbelievable. August already. I thought we just celebrated New Year's 1999. Time is just flying by and we come your way. We fly by your radio or internet connection. Every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific time, we stream live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com. We are also rebroadcast on Sundays at 3 p.m. at hsn.fm, and we are archiving these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio show page. A lot of stuff to tell you about here in that regard to the website. Now, there's not a lot of new stuff at the website per se. You can go to the schedule link. And you can see who we have coming up in the coming weeks and literally months. I have interviews already scheduled into December. I waste no time. And then you can also go to the radio shows. It actually says radio shows page. And there is no S on the link. So be that as it may, radioshow.htm is the URL, if you will. But you can also go to the missions page. If you're interested in being a part of what we're doing, we encourage you to help us out in any or every way you can. I will take energetic support and encouragement. I will also take monetary as well. To that end, if you'd like to do that, and no amount is too small. And that is because whatever you can do to support the program is greatly appreciated. There is a PayPal link. And there is also a GoFundMe link to where you can support us in that regard. And I've chosen those because they seem to be the most secure ways of doing things. There are also interviews, other interviews that have not made it to the radio airwaves yet, but will. And you are going to have first crack. They are not embargoed. We didn't do them so that we hold them until they're available there. And once they've aired on the station and they've been aired on HSN.FM, they are then put into the radio show's schedule. So you can go to the radio show, you can go to the interviews page, the link there on the website, and you can see what's not on the radio yet, but it's coming soon to a radio near you, if you will, or internet link. I like it because I'm able to actually go to the website, to the link, to listen to the radio program or archives on my phone. I have to tell you, it's just absolutely astounding what we are able to do these days as far as technology is concerned. Well, there are aspects of technology that are brought to our attention, that bring our guests to our attention. Then there's the old-fashioned way, live in studio. We have Beth McDonald of Beth McDonald Consulting. Normally, we only hear you for 5 to 7 minutes at the bottom of the hour, but we have you for the full broadcast here on the program today, and thank you for coming in.
Thanks for having me, Richard. This is awesome.
It's great to have you back. Just so people know, Beth McDonald and BethMcDonaldConsulting.com on Facebook at Beth McDonald Consulting. Twitter?
No, I don't tweet.
You don't
I am
tweet.
Not yet tweeting. Yeah, there will be a time for that, and it's not now.
It's not now.
No.
Well, I have to say that I've actually been back to my Facebook page. It's not active. It was. The funny thing is I would like to be able to go to my Facebook page without activating it, but you can't do that without activating it, so I had to deactivate it. But while I was there in the active mode, there was a photograph that claimed that I was tagged in this photograph. And there were three people in this photograph. And not one of them was me.
Nor were you present when it was taken.
Nor was I present when it was taken.
Yeah.
And I'm going, and this is what bothers me about social media is that people can say or do whatever they want, whether it's true or not. That's why I'm having a hard time getting into. Now, I do tweet. I do have a Twitter account, and I will send messages saying, hey, upcoming next week, this week, you know, this is what we have. I've even sent out a tweet to those people who are following me. I can't believe there are people following me on tweet because I don't tweet that often. And just letting people know about what we're doing. But that's right now what I'm doing. So as soon as I can get a handle on this thing.
Yeah, next time we do this, we should do this during the time of Aquarius, because Aquarius rules technology.
Okay.
And now, it's often a time when you can understand that kind of stuff more and get more in sync with it.
Now, that's interesting that you would bring up Aquarius, because I was thinking about this on the way in. I had mentioned in one of our segments together some months ago that the signs of the zodiac travel around in what I perceive of as a counterclockwise rotation. And that Aquarius is sort of there in the month of February, I think, February, March?
January, February.
Followed by what follows Aquarius in the line of succession?
Pisces.
However, when you start talking to people about what sign we're in terms of the universal calendar, if you will, where and that Jesus, for example, this is always what's brought up, that he was born in the Piscean age, and that we're then moving into the age of Aquarius, as the song goes.
Right.
But that's going in the opposite direction.
Yes.
And I know we talked a little bit. Right. I can't remember if you had any further insight into that, but I just found that rather curious.
Well, there's the Piscean age, per se, that is a period of several hundred, you know, a couple thousand years. And then there is the annual sun's progression that happens through the course of 1 year.
Right.
Astrology is very, very mathematical.
Yeah.
And it's a lot like those big algebra equations that you do, or physics, or theoretical math that take up three chalkboards, you know, where you're constantly adding and subtracting and adding and subtracting and manipulating numbers in different ways to see what they reveal or to see what you can do with them. And so that's you know how it's very much akin to the Mayan calendar. It's very parallel that way, where there's wheels within wheels.
Right.
And one's going 3 week cycle.
And the other one's going the other way, even in that Mayan calendar.
Yeah. There are cycles within cycles and wheels within wheels. And the more you want to play with it, the more sophisticated you can be. What I love about astrology is it's like swimming in the pool. You can dabble your little toes in. You can get up to your knees or your ankles. You can noodle around in the shallow end, or you can go swim with the big kids.
Yeah,
you know, it just depends on what you want to do.
By the way, I there's like a song there. Cycles within cycles, wheels within wheels.
Oh, right. from the Thomas Crown Affair. I can't remember the name of this song. A wheel within a wheel.
It'll come to
It'll come to
it
before come to the end of the hour.
Either that or in the middle of the night, you'll wake up screaming the title.
Yeah, and I'll call you.
I appreciate that. Yeah. I've got it on voicemail, so I'm not worried. Well, now, one of the reasons why we get together each week is, of course, to go over that days or weeks, the past as well as coming events and in terms of the astrological and astronomical
aspects.
Now, you had mentioned earlier before the program that there is a comet in our future.
I just heard this on NPR just yesterday, that somebody somewhere found a new comet and that it's going to be visible in the next 6 months or so. And it just has a number name.
Yeah.
And I think the end of it is 2013, because it's 2013.
Right.
But it made me think about comets and do a little bit of research, just because it's not a real common thing.
Right.
It's not something we see every day. It's not something we see every month. The last one I remember being able to see was almost 20 years ago.
Was that Hale-Bopp?
Yeah.
Yeah.
However you pronounce that. But it was right over my driveway. I could look straight up and see it. It was awesome. Yeah.
Wow.
But it's something that I would like us to spend more time in the future, doing some research on, see what different people have to say about it, and look at what historically people believed about comets.
I find it interesting, too, and I've brought this up as well, in terms of just the magnetics involved regarding the spinning planets and the moons and the solar systems and all of that.
The gravity and the magnetic fields of it all. And yeah.
And all of that impacts us as things are moving and spinning and swirling. And they always use the one example that is used time immemorial is, if you don't think the planets affect us, then let's get rid of the moon. We are 97% or more water. And as the moon spins, and the one thing I find fascinating about the moon, it's as if it were a ball on a tether,
uh-huh.
and it's being swung around. So you're always seeing the same side.
Right, right.
Talk to me a little bit about the effects of the other planets as far as their orbits and that magnetism. And does astrology take that into consideration at all?
You know, you frequently ask me that, and it's not something I'm the foremost expert on. I come at it from a more kind of spiritual, psychological, also probability and statistics. What makes astrology, I think, so accurate is that we're using the same model that, let's say, sports scouts or bookies use for predicting sports performance.
Really?
Or that Wall Street people, brokers and Moody's and the people who rate before it got so skewed and weird, of course. But
right.
You're basically using probability and statistics to analyze what certain planets did and then base future predictions on past performance.
Wow.
It's the same with a baseball player or a football player. If you know that John Lester is not real good hasn't been real good in the past at certain striking out certain players,
right.
You know, or with left-handers or right-handers or runners in scoring position or whatever.
Right.
If over time we all rack up a body of statistics, and the planets are no different. And if you know over time that, you know, when Mercury goes retrograde, these sorts of things tend to happen, then that is a safe bet that when Mercury goes retrograde in a certain place, that certain kinds of things will happen and that certain kinds of preemptive things are very helpful to do,
yeah.
safe to do. And then certain kinds of activities are just verboten. Let's not go there. We pretty much know that happens. We pretty much know where that was go. So I'm
right.
not the expert on the magnetics.
Sure.
I focus more on the math end
the
of
math
it.
And the probabilities
yeah,
and so
yeah,
on.
Yeah.
Which I find really interesting in that as you say, you can start out in the shallow end in the kiddie's pool, or you can go dive into the deep end and go
yeah.
as far as you want.
Yeah.
Because there's so much out there.
It's so fun. I mean,
yeah.
everybody's a geek about something, and I just, you know.
And that's you as far as astrology is concerned.
Yeah, I went to a class like 20-something years ago. I had always been curious, but a friend had told me, hey, there's this class. I had the time. I had the money. I showed up. I was hooked from the first minute,
now,
and it just became.
You say yeah. it's mathematical.
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to throw a question at you that was thrown to another one of our guests who will be on in 2 weeks, David Hawthorne, who's an Eastern
right,
astrology,
right.
Vedic astrology.
One of your favorites. Yeah.
And he was asked this question. I will ask you this question.
Yeah.
How does it work? How do you know that it works? And that was the question that was thrown to him. I will share with our listeners so you don't have to go back to the interview. His answer was, you know, I've never been asked that question before. I just know.
Well,
and
that's
does it. Then,
yeah,
then
well,
do you pull in the statistics and probabilities and say,
well,
and this is
fascinating because my situation's a little different. Maybe I'm a little more anal retentive or like detail oriented. I make my living being accurate. You know, in this field, as an intuitive, as an astrologer, if you're not accurate, you're just taking people's money. You know, and so I have a really vested interest in being accurate. And you only know how accurate you are by tracking things. I'm one of the few people who in this industry who keeps really detailed notes and files on my regular clients so we can see
mm-hmm.
how this affected them, how it didn't, what worked, what didn't, what was in play, what wasn't. And so I can tell you in the beginning, you know, maybe my situation's also a little different because I started out as a straight intuitive. In the beginning, I was just doing straight psychic readings. I'm clairvoyant, I'm auditory, I'm kinesthetic, I'm the rare triple threat, I've got it. You know, it comes on both sides of my family, and so it's just there. And so I started doing that, and then I took up this astrology class. And in the beginning, I was just kind of doing it and interested, but it takes a lot of years before you have the chops to really feel good about using it.
You have to hone
in your sessions. You really have to hone the tools, and that comes from observing.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, this gal has this configuration, and she's a triple Virgo or whatever, and she really behaves this way. And it's like anything else. There are really different schools of thought.
But when you talk about accuracy, there are those, I will say, skeptics.
Yeah.
I mean, there are many of them, critics and skeptics, who say this is just guesswork. You're just taking, you know, where the planets were or are, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And there's this is all guesswork. How can you even claim? I mean, they could certainly say that of just an intuitive, someone who is tapping into the other person. But that brings me to sort of my next aspect of this in terms of the cynics, if you will. With an intuitive, my understanding is that you are picking up on that individual's, shall we say, energy at that moment, and that the next moment it could shift or change because that person's wants, needs, and desires will shift and change as they move through their life. But when it comes to astrology, if it's mathematical, there is no guesswork. The things are where they are, when they are.
Right.
Two and two is four, not
and
five or six or
that's
seven.
That's why the whole psychic astrologer thing really came together so nicely for me.
Okay.
You know, the thing with skeptics is they're going to believe what they're going to believe. And most of them, and I can't tell you how many times I've encountered stuff like this, some of the people who have been the most experience that I have, the people who've been the most confrontational with me personally are people who've never sat with me, never had a reading with me, or anybody else for that matter. And for me, what that brings up is everybody has the right to be as skeptical or committed as they want to be. This is America. You can believe whatever you want to believe.
Mm-hmm.
But anything that involves what they say in the 12-step programs, contempt prior to investigation,
mm-hmm.
is just wasting a lot of people's time and emotion.
Yeah, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's not the highest and best use of anybody's energy and resources.
Yeah. You're going in looking for a flaw.
You're picking a fight.
Yeah.
And I'm not remotely interested in that.
Yeah.
I am interested in research.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I am interested in statistical analysis. I am interested for my own benefit, even as an intuitive. Those people can be as skeptic as they want, but I can stand in someone's presence and in 5 minutes know all kinds of juicy details that I ain't supposed to know.
Right.
You know, and no amount of their skepticism can really impact or change or take that away.
So what you're telling me is that the NSA has nothing on you.
Oh, they got lots on me, actually. That's a funny, 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 funny story.
Well, let's hold that because I want to go into another area as well. We'll go back to the NSA and you.
Yeah.
In our next segment here,
my clients. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I want to ask you: have you ever? I asked David this question.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping he maybe I'll touch base with him to see if he can't put something together for our program on the 17th.
Yeah.
But I want to ask you about. Have you ever taken, and I don't know how many clients you have,
right?
But have you ever taken and correlated them or overlaid them one over the other to get a sense of, get a broader perspective of what's going on in the world? Maybe even taking a time frame prior to a big event, whether you want to think of 9/11, you want to think of an election, you want to think of anything else, and say, okay, I've overlaid these 100, 200, 5,000, whatever, and the outcome of that event is right here in the overlay. kind of thing.
Right.
It makes sense that why this happened, because look at the charts of these people.
Right. I actually do a lot of that. I do a lot of that with Jamie. A lot of the books have kind of been born out of that. And one of the things that's the most fun about it, because the charts are so complicated, you know, there's many planets, there's many asteroids, there's many different celestial points that different astrologers consider. It's a big math equation.
Yeah,
and so what you notice is a certain configuration that's coming up in the future. Like, for example, in about the time of the fall equinox this year, the planet Saturn, which in Western astrology is in the sign of Scorpio, will be conjunct the North Node at roughly 10 degrees.
Okay.
And
that translates into?
Well, for certain people, that's going to translate into more opportunities to learn specific things. For example, people in who were born in 1961 who have the planet Neptune at that roughly 10 degree mark really are going to have to get clearer about some things, maybe where they've been a little out of reality, maybe where they've been a little confused or delusional or even depressed. That's going to shift, and that's going to shift dramatically. And what I love about that, and what I love about dabbling in this, especially with other astrologers, is because everybody's got something to add.
Yeah.
You know, because it is such a big field.
Yeah. I like the word you chose, opportunities.
Opportunities. Everything is an opportunity. Language is everything.
That's right. When we started talking about all of these things, we're doing our monthly following of the signs. And we hit the first Mercury in retrograde. That was the word that you used.
Yeah.
This was not a time of dread and fear.
Or panic.
And
no.
Panic.
No.
It was a time to take advantage of the opportunities as well as to observe oneself.
That's what I believe.
Yeah.
Different astrologers see it very, very differently.
Sure, sure.
But I don't believe in anything. I don't believe in talking about things in ways that are not empowering.
Right, exactly.
Because it, you know, there's enough depression and despair out there as it is.
Yeah.
It doesn't serve. It doesn't help on any level.
I think it's better when you're talking about, say, personal issues or challenges that
yeah.
we face
yeah.
that may have come about from childhood experiences. And what I'm finding interesting is from that perspective that I'm hearing that, and because we've gone through phases over the last, I'm going to say the last 30 years, from the whole codependency craze of the late 80s into interdependency and so forth. And what I'm noticing now is that people are now saying, yes, you've had these issues that were formed in your families, from your childhood. We understand all that, and we're not negating it. What you need to do now is embrace that part of you, because that's why you are and who you are today.
Right.
So that you can transition and move forward in things.
Yeah.
In that sense.
There's different schools of thought. And one of the things I love about astrology and intuitives and all that stuff is it's such a perfect adjunct. It's such an awesome addition to whatever else you're using, whether it's psychotherapy or a religion or Reiki or acupuncture or chiropractic or any combination. You know, I really believe that using a multimodal approach will get you wherever you're trying to go faster and with greater ease. It's just about, you know, you have a bigger team, you have more resources, especially if you authorize the different practitioners to communicate with each other in the
Well, that would be very interesting.
Yeah, it's really awesome. I was really fortunate when I was coming up in this field because it was very different then. There was so clearly this generational these generational lines. You know, 20 years ago I was the young pup, and there were all these awesome grand dames of the field, and most of them were women, and they were, it was also open and free, and they were also generous with me, with their time. And one of the things that they were very clear about is that we really do have a responsibility to educate people. It's not just fortune telling anymore. It's really, really different. It's much more much more now. And one of the resources they threw at me really on early on was a series of books by a woman, Barbara Brennan, who founded a school and a mode of healing. I believe it was something about Hands of Light. But she talks very much about the importance of a healing team. If you are in any sort of spiritual crisis or emotional, psychological crisis, or if you're simply trying to fast track something, you know, and that's where I started working with a lot of business people, because business people are much more aggressive about solving problems because it's about money. Yeah. It's not just about their stuff.
Right,
you know, it's
right.
not just about their emotional stuff. It's about their money. And so they're much more aggressive, and they're much more likely to construct a group of people who are all working together for their great, for that client's greater good. And I love that model. I was raised in that, and I love that model.
When we come back from the break, I want to talk a little bit more about the past and the present as far as your experiences with your clients and the subject matter that they want to know about.
Okay.
And we'll also talk about the NSA and Beth McDonald. Stay tuned.
Professional glassblower and craftsman Saul Alcaraz of Santa Barbara Art Glass can teach you to make that special gift for that special someone.
I guarantee that if you come in here, you will make paperweights, tumblers, or a mug, a bowl. You will get it done on your first lesson, even if you've never done it. Guarantee.
If I wanted to learn how to blow glass, what do I need to come to Saul with?
You gotta be extremely hyper, especially if you're gonna be doing it professional. You only have like 5 seconds to work with. If you wanna create art and sculpting and all that kind of stuff, then it's not a problem. You can take your time. Glass will not break.
Can people come by the shop unexpected?
I like it when they come in unexpected, and they'll probably bring some good energy in. Our studio, it's at 706 East Mason Street, 2 blocks from Miotas in Santa Barbara.
How do people get a hold of you?
Check out my website, sbrglass.com, or call us at 805-965-1541.
Remember the stories your family used to tell?
Till I got married, 1913, when my father and my uncle came from Italy.
When was the last time you listened to the songs of your youth?
Well, close.
Yes, very swinging sound here in the Bilhart Underground. That's Wild Things.
Want to hear those voices and music again? Fast Forward can help. Fast Forward Audio Communications can transfer your records and tapes to CD so you can hear them again for the first time.
You're listening to a live transmission of the voice of astronaut Walter Chirac.
Those memories are priceless and are great to hand down to the next generation. Keep those memories alive. Call 805-708-9804.
That's the greatest thing that I ever heard.
Fast Forward. It's the right direction for preserving your family memories. Just call 805-708-9804.
The Chari Center of Health with Deepak and Rupa Chari bring you this health tip.
Here's today's Chari Center of Health powerful quick tip to burn fat. Wake up and work out. Here's a powerful way to burn fat quickly in the morning. As soon as you wake up in the morning, work out for at least 30 minutes to an hour. Studies have shown that working out in the morning has been shown to burn up to 3 times more fat as opposed to working out at any other time during the day. An elevated metabolism throughout the day only means that you'll burn more calories and lose more weight. So on your morning checklist, work out for at least 30 minutes after waking up in the morning and eat a healthy breakfast. Morning exercisers stay with it. Studies have shown that people who exercise in the morning are more likely to still be exercising 1 year later when compared to those who exercise at other times during the day. And morning exercisers have more energy. Although initially you may have to drag yourself out of bed in the morning to exercise, it's worth it. You'll have more energy at work and energy to take care of the kids.
And morning exercisers sleep better. Exercising in the morning will help you sleep better at night, since you hopefully are sleeping earlier to get up earlier. This way you'll follow your natural sleep cycle. And morning exercisers eat healthier. Getting up early to exercise creates a mindset of doing something positive and healthy, so you'll probably eat healthier. And morning exercisers are in a better mood. Exercising in the morning creates a positive, happy mood, and your mind will feel clear and calm. That great feeling can last all day after a morning workout. Please start an exercise program in the morning and enjoy the many life-changing benefits.
Take your health to the next level for the new year. Go to charicenter.com. That's charicenter.com. Or call 805-963-1111. That's 805-963-1111.
And welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, along with Beth McDonald of BethMcDonaldConsulting.com, as well as on Facebook at Beth McDonald Consulting. No tweeting yet.
No tweeting yet.
And it's amazing how we are using these new tools that are available to us. I remember when I first started interviewing, I was recording my interviews in the 80s on cassette.
Yeah.
And producing them up and then running those cassettes on the radio station I was working for and saving those. And it's funny, when we moved to Santa Barbara, a lot of our stuff stayed outside in boxes or in a file cabinet, but they were outside. And of course, that particular year, the fog, the moisture and so forth, no rain. We didn't have problems with that because it was summer, but they stayed out there for, I'm going to honestly say, for almost 9 months.
Yeah.
And when I went to when we went to start finally honing down what we had outside and move into the house or into the shed, I started going through. Literally, I had a file cabinet. This is one of those tall, deep drawers, two drawers full of cassettes. And I thought, you know, one of these days I'm going to transfer these to the computer. Blah 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 blah. And as I started to move them into boxes to bring into the house, I started looking at the labels that were curling off and smeared because of the moisture and this and that and the other, and thinking, you do realize that that is not your best work. Your best work is what you're doing now.
Right.
Why would you keep these other than for posterity? Which then brings to mind this comment that in the one-man play by James Whitmore, Give Him Hell, Harry, where he's talking about how he caught his wife sitting in front of the fireplace tossing old love letters that he'd written to her into the fire. And he says, what are you doing? And she says, well, I'm just burning these old love letters. He says, well, why? She says, well, why should I keep them? I've read them. He says, well, think of posterity. And she says, I am. And she kept right on throwing them in. So I thought, why would I keep these? I mean, other than from, and I'm really going to go back and listen to them.
Right.
Maybe in a way I wish I'd kept some of them. And I did. I have one box in the house. But I interviewed these people, and then it moved to CDs. Okay. And then, of course, now it's just files, MP3 files. And so now, I mean, on the website, I've been doing this for 6 years.
Yeah.
And I haven't even used up a gigabyte of audio file space on the website yet, because these are so small.
Yeah.
But I have 6 times 52, as you folks do the math, and there's a lot of interviews up there.
Yeah.
But it's fascinating to me how, as the technology has changed, we've had to kind of change the way in which we do things and communicate with one another.
Oh my gosh, and how we do our business, and even Our cars are so computerized.
Oh,
it's just so funny.
Oh,
but
well, I even joked with the dealer at the place where we bought our car that we drive now, and fortunately, it does not have GPS.
Ha-ha.
But I do have it on my phone.
Yeah.
But I don't use it as a tool per se. It's more of a source of entertainment.
Yeah.
The reason is because they even tell you when you start it up that it's not 100% accurate. It's within 50 to 100 feet or something like that. And so as we're driving down the 101, the GPS is saying to make all of these different maneuvers, we're still on the freeway and the destination is 30 miles up. And it's telling us to turn off and do all these maneuvers because it's saying that we've gotten off the freeway.
Oh, yeah.
So we laugh. It's entertainment.
It's totally entertainment.
I know where we're going. I knew before we left, so I don't need the GPS, but it's kind of fun.
Yeah.
Before we jump into Leo and Lammas.
Yes.
Because I want to spend a good 10 or 15 minutes there. You and the NSA.
Oh, yeah.
You were kind of joking about that a little bit.
It's funny. It's a source of great mirth at our house, partially because of my own naivete. This was much more of an issue for us several years ago than it is now. But, you know, I work with all different kinds of people, and I first noticed it, I was working with a couple of folks who were active duty military servicemen.
Right.
And whenever we were doing phone work and we were talking on the phone, I would always hear this clicking on the background in certain intervals. And the first couple of times, I just kind of tried not to pay any attention to it because it's my work is to help people and not to be paranoid about this or that.
Right.
You know. And finally, the client mentioned it and just said, "Is this something that you normally hear on your phone?" And I said, "No." And he said, "I think we should meet in person from now on." So we did. And so that was one situation.
Right.
And then after that, I got a client who was a businessman and who was trying to do business with different companies in the Arab world.
Okay.
And moving large sums of money and whatnot and getting investors and buying and selling things and stuff like that. And I can't remember what the clue was. It wasn't auditory that time, but there was something else.
You picked up on something.
We were being watched. And then the third time was during the Iraq War, I was working with film crew that was doing a documentary and kind of working extensively with them. And then later it became very clear that the NSA was watching those folks and by extension us. And so then we decided to do things a little differently.
Well, there are two.
Point, it's so funny to me that this is such a big honking deal for people now and people are so outraged because for us, we were going through this between 2000 and 2006,
yeah.
seven, whenever Fallujah was,
yeah.
you know, it was, you know, by now it's kind of passe. It's kind of, you
yeah.
know, no big deal. It's like, oh yeah, it's so old. It's kind of old hat, you know?
Well, George Bush Jr. told us shortly
Straight
after
up.
We he said,
yeah.
with Homeland Security and the Patriot Act, we're going to be listening
yeah.
in. I mean, you know, plus the fact that knowing the technology of cell phones in particular, the way that I do, let alone landlines.
Yeah. yeah.
And then of course, then there's the internet, you know, from day one on both counts, I never took the position, and I can't believe anybody ever did, that you had any level of privacy.
No.
Somebody also told
no.
me that if you want to really go back, all of this listening in started with the Eisenhower administration. But I'll go one better than that. You're dealing with
J. Edgar.
The spirit. No, no, no.
Oh.
You're dealing with the spiritual realms. And I took this position back in the 80s. I thought, because I was going through my own personal religious and spiritual crises and development, I thought, well, if God knows, what difference does it make if 7 billion other people know, plus the fact most of them won't even care, but if God knows, then that's all that, you know, it's out there.
Well,
you know what I'm saying? I mean, it's like, in a manner of speaking, we've never,
there is
as
no
a
privacy.
Human race, we've never had
there
privacy.
There is no privacy. Yeah. On the biggest possible, you know,
yes.
macro level, there
yeah.
is no
there is none.
Privacy.
Yeah.
There is no privacy.
I mean,
and,
if you can tap into...
Right.
What's going on
right.
with me as an intuitive?
Right, right.
There is no hope. The tinfoil hat isn't
to help
anymore. Isn't
going to help anymore. Right, right. That's absolutely brilliant.
Let's talk
that's
about
right.
Leo and Lammas. First of all, I want to send out, I'll probably have a chance to, well, no, I won't have a chance to until the 17th, to wish my father a happy 82nd birthday,
happy birthday
on the 13th
Dad.
Of this
yeah.
month.
Wow.
Unbelievable. And of course, he got me to remember his birthday by the date, basically, of 8/13/31, and so 13 and 31 are just the two numbers reversed.
Oh, how interesting.
Yeah, which
well
I thought
done.
Was pretty cool. Plus the fact that you have the 8, which is the two threes.
Oh, the two threes sideways.
Sideways
yeah, yeah.
to each other. So, you know, it's kind of cool.
Smart Dad.
So anyway, 82 this year, incredible, doing great. The parents are doing fantastic, and a happy birthday to my dad. And that takes us to Leo, the lion.
The lion. Leo
and Lammas.
And Lammas. Fiesta, it's so funny, you know, Fiesta is kind of the Santa Barbara Lammas Festival.
Ah, interesting
know?
Correlation.
Yeah, yeah. It's the similar kind of energy. We're coming together as a community. We're celebrating the past. We're looking forward to the future.
And you have to wonder who set the first Fiesta up.
Right, right.
I mean, was it a conscious thing?
I have no idea. I don't know. I don't know anything about the history.
But tell us about Lammas, this celebration.
Well, Lammas is an ancient European, is the ancient Celtic name for the ancient ceremony, or not ceremony, the time of year that we are in now. You know, you and I, in the course of our little conversations, we talk a lot about the quarter days, the solstices and the equinoxes. Mm-hmm. Every culture marked the solstices and the equinoxes because their survival depended on it. But not as well known are what is called the cross quarter days.
Sort of the eighths.
The eighths.
Between the quarters.
The eighths. The eighths between the quarters. And Lammas is the 1/8, you know, between the quarter of
the summer
solstice and the fall equinox. Okay. And so we're about 6 weeks after the summer solstice, and we're about 6 weeks away from the fall equinox. And it is in the Mediterranean European region, it was a really big honking deal for obvious seasonal climactic reasons. And it was literally translated, Lammas in ancient Gaelic is first fruits. It is the real beginning of the serious harvest time. And often we're really, at this time, getting glimpses into our personal, you know, if you're a gardener like me and my husband, it's like not only are you getting a glimpse into your literal harvest, you know, the chard and the lettuce did really well this year. We can't grow watermelons or certain kinds of cantaloupes for love or money. You know what I mean? There's the literal harvest, but there's also the figurative harvest of our spiritual evolution, our spiritual growth, our emotional growth. You know, we set goals at the new year, end of 2012, beginning of 2013. We fostered and nurtured those along all this time. Here we are 8 months later, 9 months later. It's like, okay, how are we doing with those? What's been easy? What's been hard? And with some of the things, you can salvage. Mm-hmm. You can tweak it. With some of the things, you really have to kind of scrap it and put that on the back burner for next year, you know. It's really a time of fine-tuning your harvest, knowing that you've got a period of weeks and months left before the harvest season is ended and we go to the winter.
Hmm. Well, it makes sense to me because as you're heading towards the winter, you really want to start gathering not only your physical harvest, but your community, your people together. Bring them closer to home because the weather is going to start changing, getting colder, and you want to be close to hearth and home, as the phrase might go, to basically hunker down to get through the winter season. And as of course, it's not quite the same per se as you work your way closer to the equator.
Right.
But nonetheless, it's still the same basic, I think still the same basic principle in that, what I'm seeing is that we as a people, it just in a general sense, and maybe this has something to do with going from the Piscean to the Aquarian age, I don't know, in terms of people are really focusing a lot more on community, lot more on not just, you know, think globally, buy locally kind of thing.
It's much more sophisticated now.
Yes.
And I do think that is a massive byproduct and benefit of the economic crisis and the austerity that we are currently living with. Families really have to figure out their stuff now in ways that they haven't had to do since the Great Depression. We don't have the luxury of our money anymore. We don't have the luxury of our insulation anymore to just kind of divert and distract or buy a new solution. We really have to get, you know, roll up our sleeves and get down to the nitty gritty and have the difficult conversations, ask the difficult questions, stay calm.
Yeah, that's key.
And figure it out.
That is key.
Yeah.
Staying calm.
Because
I'm getting emotional.
Stay calm.
I know that early on when we first moved here, over the course of the first 3 or 4 years, with all of the fires that we had, it was either I was getting calloused to it, and so I was not getting as freaked out every time there was smoke in the air.
Right.
You know.
Right.
Or I was starting to understand the process to where the last one that was in the backcountry behind us, that we could actually see the flames coming up over the hill down by the picnic areas and everything.
Right.
My attitude at that moment was, as long as we and the animals are safe, I don't care what happens to the rest of this stuff.
Right.
But when you talk about the austerity, when you have these kinds of things happen, from my perspective, it's exposing the fat. So you don't normally see it. When things are going great, you don't see the fat.
Right. Right.
But when...
The waste.
Yeah, you don't see the waste. Right. But now we're seeing... Oh, I was doing that? Did I really need to be doing that?
Right.
And now you're going to cut it away.
Right.
So that when times do shift back towards whatever system we will have down the road here, because people are saying it's going to change. It's going to be better, but it's not going to be the same.
Right.
You're going to, I think what we're going to see is a look towards, we don't need to be adding a bunch of stuff to the pile again. Okay, we cleaned it all away during the lean times. We don't need to be piling it back on now.
Well,
we need to maintain
things,
a certain
That's
level.
One aspect of it.
Okay.
For me, again, coming back to like working with business people and working with money and finances and even legal issues, one of the things that I think at least Americans were really confronted by with this economic
opportunity
is that most of us aren't really present with our money. Most of us aren't really present with our emotions around our money. Yeah. Most of us really don't know in anything more than a rudimentary way how to manage the money that you get. You know, there's an old maxim about money where they say it's not what you make, it's what you do with what you make.
Right, right.
And America really kind of gets carried away with what you make.
Yes.
Now, granted, most people in America make less than $50,000 a year, which isn't much.
Yeah.
And we can't always change that, but we can change what we do with it. And, you know, I'm constantly shocked at the people who don't balance their checkbook every month, you know, who don't know exactly what they're making, who don't know exactly where it all goes, and who really don't understand that they can, even if they're not making very much money, by just making some very easy to understand but hard to emotionally be present with kind of changes in their lives by just like paying more attention to what they spend and what they bring in, and then learning some basic tools just about savings, automatic deductions. Some of the life insurance policies are very sophisticated financial tools.
Yeah.
You know, there's if you're not saving money, you're not getting ahead. You know, you're not prepared for anything. Most of us were raised to be kind of the consumer nation, the debtor nation.
Yeah.
Most people, you know, come out of high school and college with tons of debt and don't know what to do with it and just build on it.
My savings is in my credit cards.
Right, right. And so it's in my wallet, you know.
Or under the
whatever.
Mattress.
Or whatever. And so a lot of it's just really fine-tuning, learning new, being willing to change, being willing to just chip away at learning new skills and tools.
I had a conversation just recently, and we were just talking about different things, and this person has a business and they offer a service, and they were offering me the service, this person said to me, and I'll bring to the table this, a little silence, and I thought, okay, and this tells you that I need to work on it as well as in terms of the emotions, the verbiage. I said, so what do I need to bring to the table, instead of, and how much will that cost?
Yeah.
And then when she told me
how
much, I'm going, I can't afford that.
Right.
That's a little over the top for me, maybe not for someone else. But
you're right. Learning how to have those conversations.
Yeah.
You know, most of us aren't raised to be very financially sophisticated.
Yeah.
And honestly, I think we should be teaching kids this in high school.
Oh, yeah.
We should be teaching kids this in high school, in college, if they go. There should be adult ed stuff that's just, you know, free or low cost, so that people can be smarter and less impoverished, yeah. especially in a downturn economy.
Oh, yeah.
Especially when it's like this, when so many people don't have jobs or are underemployed. Or
and unfortunately, the financial impoverishment ends up generating other aspects of impoverishment, if you will.
Yeah.
Emotional
and
mental.
Yeah.
And in some instances, spiritual.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and that's, by the way, that is something I was going to ask you about in terms of the conversations you've had over the years, the topics that, although I'm guessing instead of them asking you a jillion questions as just a flat out intuitive, you're actually telling them what you're seeing in their chart. So there's not as many questions, but I'm curious, have the topics shifted
dramatically
over the last 10, 20 years?
Okay. Oh my God.
Because it used to be, what about my love life? What about my job? What about moving? What about money?
Yeah, it's love and money. It's the joke in my industry. Love and money are always the primary topics,
okay.
whether you're working with a stay-home mom or a Fortune 500 guy. You know, they're always, it will always come around to that at some point. When I first started doing this, it was a lot more strategic planning with people where it wasn't a crisis. It was simply about, you know, I've got this great job. How do I have more work-life balance? Or I've got this great job, but I'd really like my boss's job or my boss's boss's job. How do I position myself?
Yeah.
How do I, you know, how mm-hmm. do I move forward? It used to be so much more strategic planning. And I love that. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I really love that. And I miss it a lot more now. It's crisis management, and it's a lot more serious crisis management. I do a couple of foreclosures a year, prevent a couple of foreclosures a year.
Yeah,
I help smooth over and mediate about 6 divorces a year. It's it's fascinating, and a lot of financial things, money things. Every year at Christmas, there's at least 2 suicidal teens. Institutions that are involved, different medical and psychotherapeutic professionals and stuff like that. It's a lot more problem solving than it used to be. But, you know, if it's helping people and it's getting people where they're trying to go, you know, that's why I'm here. And so it's a lot of that. It has changed dramatically. It has changed dramatically.
I've often said that if this planet were to hold a seminar for the rest of the universe, it would be on crisis management, because that's what we seem to do best.
Well, and some of it is cultural. Some of it is cultural. There was that awesome quote by Winston Churchill in, I believe, the late 30s, maybe early 40s, where he said, you know, America, and I'm paraphrasing, you know, America can be always be counted on to do the right thing only after they have exhausted every other possible option. And, you know, one of the reasons I love history is I can't say enough about studying history. We don't do it enough. Is that if you don't understand history, you are doomed to keep doing the same thing over and over again. And we're kind of seeing that again.
Yeah, the comedian Dennis Miller in his comedy acts would make reference, would speak about what I would refer to as obscure historical references.
Yeah,
but
they're
only obscure historical references because I don't know about them.
Right, right.
So now I got to go look them up.
Right.
And then I got to put them in the context of his routine and think, and the light bulb goes off.
Right.
Now, because we're just about out of time here on the program, again, people can get a hold of you through BethMcDonaldConsulting.com.
Yes.
They can get through you at Facebook, Beth McDonald Consulting.
Yes.
And they can contact you directly by calling 805-963-0842.
Very good.
I have to think of the backward
Absolutely.
Question mark.
You do that very well.
Hey, thanks so much for coming
Thank
in.
Thank you.
And
it's
we'll
really
have you
good.
Have you on next week. We'll talk more about
Leo.
Leo the lion and Lammas. Is that a long drawn out celebration?
No, there's two of them. We had there's always the lunar and the solar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had the lunar a couple of weeks ago and the solar was yesterday.
Okay.
So we're kind of ramping that down and ramping towards the fall equinox.
Looking forward to that because
yeah.
it's cooler weather. I don't care what they say. Cooler weather is coming. I'm Richard Dugan with Beth McDonald. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm encouraging you to stay with us. Next week, we'll be back with another program here on Tell Me Your Story. And it's New Paradigms for a New World. Until next time, love to Lal.